This is the Past Lives podcast, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. To get access to the extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives podcast Patreon campaign. And when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. And you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. This week I'm talking to Alison Ward about her book, Reluctantly Psychic, True Stories of Awakenings and Soul Purpose. And we're also going to talk about her near-death experience. The book, Reluctantly Psychic, was conceived and created in just 16 days of lockdown. This book is a collection of true stories from men and women who have all found their purpose by accepting their psychic gifts. Hi, Alison. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
My pleasure. Hi, Simon.
So your book is called Reluctantly Psychic. How did the book come about? Because it's quite an interesting story.
It is. Well, in lockdown, I was looking at ways where I could reach people who were in fear or were suffering from anxiety. And even though I've been doing spiritual work professionally for 22 years now, the last few years, my work has always been also been helping people who've been suffering with anxiety or challenges in life. And I've been mentoring them through that. So I was very concerned about the high rise in the mental health or the mental illness within this pandemic. So all through lockdown, I was in a really good place mentally. So I was being of true service, and I kept being told in meditation that you've been in training for this your whole life. And I asked, you know, well, how can I be of service, because I was in such a good place. One of the things I started to do was Facebook Lives, where I do live energy insight sessions, readings, give people the energy theme of the week, and they went really well. So that was one thing I did. I also did live pop-up mental wellness hubs. People who were struggling with their mental health could come on and ask questions, and I would give them some help back. And then the one day I was sitting down saying, right, is there anything else I can do? And many years ago I was given the title of Reluctant Psychic as one of my books. I've already written 6 books. And as I sat there, I was told, you need to write the next book, Reluctant Psychic. So I was sitting there thinking, okay, that's good, I'll do that. And I started to plan the book. And it then made me laugh, because part of my situation where I had my awakening in 1994, I have got memory issues. And I couldn't remember all the amazing psychic things that happened to me over the whole of my lifetime. And I'm 56 this month in September. So I start laughing because the irony of not remembering all these psychic things that happened. And as I was laughing I was in total flow, laughing and being very present, I got the very strong message, make this a collaborative book. So I put a couple of messages out on social media and just tagged a few people who I thought might be interested. Would you like to write for my next book, Reluctant Psychic? And 16 days later, the book was written with 44 authors, including me, 130,000 words. It's a big book. And then it was released on 9th of August. But interestingly, as the book was being... as I compiled the book and threaded all the stories through, I asked my son to help me with the launch and the social media, because he's an events director. And due to the events obviously stopping, he was able to work with us, but for less than he would normally charge. And he said to me, Mum, I don't like the title. He said, Reluctantly Psychic is far more powerful. So I changed the title to Reluctantly Psychic, which opened up the book to a whole new genre of people. And that is those who actually don't even realize they're psychic and don't even realize they have these innate gifts that they're born with. So we targeted the whole social media campaign towards Reluctantly Psychic. So that's how it came about.
You got the book together really quickly. So how did you structure it with all these different authors? Was it quite a challenge?
Simon, that's an understatement of the century. Getting the stories in was the easy part, but coordinating everything and getting everything to go to the publisher was a real challenge, because you've got 44 different personalities. I will say it's a massive learning curve, and I certainly learned some new leadership skills, shall we say.
Well, that's what you need if you're kind of, it's like this, you're the shepherd, aren't you? You're bringing it all together, and sometimes I suppose some of the sheep run off.
They run off, and they don't always understand deadlines, or don't always like to comply because they're such free spirits. When you sort of say, right, I need this by a certain day, not everyone would comply to that. So, it was interesting. It was quite amusing, really, but a little bit frustrating too. But all good, all good.
So if we can go to the title of the book, why would somebody be reluctantly psychic?
Well, this is really interesting. And what I've actually discovered since we've written the book is that some of the authors in the book are less reluctantly psychic now than they were at the beginning. And one lady in particular, I'm sure she won't mind me sharing because we have discussed this, Dawn Alexander, she shares her amazing story. She's become a lot more visible since the book has been published. And a lot of psychics don't like to be visible because they're fearful of being ridiculed or being challenged. So quite a few of the psychics have been in the psychic closet, if you like, and this book has certainly pushed them to be more visible and to own in their gifts and to share the gifts with the world. That has been really apparent from this book. Yet some of the authors are still being very quiet, very hidden, and I'm hoping that as this book evolves and we evolve with it, that they will start to realise that we need to see them, we need to see who they are and what they're doing, so that they can shine their light even brighter than when they first started their journey.
I suppose it's a shame as well, because if you look back, it's been, 140, 150 years since they started the Society for Psychical Research, which is back in the Victorian era, and we haven't really seemed to have advanced in society, have we?
Well, you know, I realised as well that because I've been doing a lot of work with the, mental health challenges, I realised that I was probably hiding behind that a little bit as well, because a lot of my clients who I've worked with in that genre, going through challenges, mental health challenges, have said to me that the sessions with me helped them tremendously because I was so intuitive to their needs. But I was aware that sometimes I wouldn't let my clients know until they got to know me that actually I was psychic and therefore intuitive. But that actually became the USP in the work I was doing eventually. And I think where we are now, it is about evolving, and it is about evolving as individuals and collaborating as one, because, Simon, that was also the main reason behind this book, was about collaborating as one voice, one commonality, that we want to bring love and connection and collaboration to the world, where we all have a different voice, but the message is the same, and that is we need to work together rather than work against each other.
So you had a near-death experience.
Yeah.
Were you psychic before the near-death experience, or is that a product, sort of, say, an after-effect?
I was, from as long as I can remember, from being a very young child, I remember seeing fairies and being very different. And I remember my mom saying to my infant school teacher, so I would have been 5 or 6, not to let me listen to the stories if they did fairy stories, because it messed with my imagination. But it didn't mess with my imagination. They were literally stories from my friends. So I was really excited when I used to hear these stories. So I'd always been psychic and a little bit weird. That's a that's a generic word that we tend to use. But when I went through my near-death experience in 1994, what definitely happened was I got a stronger connection. I got a stronger connection, and I was a much clearer channel. And that was definitely as a byproduct of dying and coming back, without a doubt about that.
Right. So it's kind of like the veil was thin for you, but by making that connection through a near-death experience, it made it even thinner.
Thinner, because what I felt was true, and the energy that I felt solidified the fact that I was safe, and that when you go home, when you pass on, that it's not a challenging or frightening experience. It's really rather lovely, and actually it's a rather beautiful experience.
So how did it come about? How did the near-death experience start?
So what happened in 1994, I'd split up from a very abusive partner. We had a two-year-old son. And it was the old cliche, really. I then met my husband, who I've now been with for nearly 25 years, and my ex found out about it, and he didn't like it. So he decided that he was going to kill me and my two-year-old little boy. And what happened was he visited me one night when he wasn't actually meant to be in the area. It was about tea time on the 5th of July, 1994. And he entered our home because he said he wanted to talk about access to our son and to about looking after him and being a proper parent. So I thought, great, this is wonderful, let him in. And then minutes later, he pulled a knife from his back pocket and said, "Today's the day you're going to die." And he then proceeded to beat me up and stab me in front of my little boy, who, as you can imagine, was absolutely petrified. But then I actually felt myself leave my body. I became energy and I left my body at speed. And as I left it, I saw this amazing bright light waiting for me. And at the point of the triangle was my dad, my granddad Sam, who my son happened to be named after. And as I was moving closer towards him, I could see how well he looked. He looked younger. He looked really well. And the love and the support was just, oh, it was invigorating. It was just so beautiful. I had no physical pain, no emotional pain. I knew that my son was in the room, yet I knew he was okay, as bizarre as that sounds. And then I heard this very old-fashioned brummy voice say to me, "Not time to go yet, duck." And then I was literally back in my body into the bloody mess of me in the room. And then I just said to the attacker, I said, "Look, what would your mum say if she saw you doing this to me and our son?" And he let out a noise and moved back. And as he moved back, I was able to escape the house and managed to get some help. The story did continue. He then took our son and was found by the police trying to gas himself in the car with him. But miracles happened after that, basically, because it was absolutely incredible how we were both saved and how we survived it, because the odds were against us that day. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
Yeah, and you must have suffered such a trauma there that also as having that kind of spiritual after effects, there must have been some kind of PTSD after effects.
We both had PTSD, and what it did to me personally, because obviously I don't want to speak to my son because he's got his own experience of it, but it totally smashed my whole belief system. It was like the Alison that used to be, she totally disappeared, and I was reborn. And I actually don't know that person anymore. She is not a person I can really resonate with, because that old Alison wasn't this strong Alison who would never put up with anything like that again. And I saw it as a massive rebirth, and I also saw it as a reset, because I was able to rethink my belief system and reintegrate myself into society in this new persona. And I turned the pain. I'm not dismissing the pain, and the aftermath was far worse than what actually happened in the attack that I now call the awakening. But the aftermath and how we were treated and by the system and by everything else was horrendous, and it isn't a place I want to go back to and revisit, because it was just constant, and mentally it was a very, very dark, dark, lonely place that, you know, even though I had people around me who loved me, and same with my son, it's a very isolating experience.
How was your perception during the near-death experience? Because I've heard it described as realer than real.
Oh my God, it was pure bliss, pure presence, pure love, pure connection. And it has created me not fearing death at all, at all. And I know that when I've shared this story with people who are scared of death, because there are so many, many people who are really scared of death and have a phobia about death. When I've shared this experience before on the media, I've had conversation with people, and it's actually offered them reassurance. So I always like to turn things into a positive. So that experience has helped other people as I share it with them, and I'm really happy about that and humbled by that.
So if we move on a little bit here, you say in the book that you've had out-of-body experiences as well.
Yeah.
How do they compare to the near-death experience? Is it a similar thing?
No, very, very different. So I used to start having them as a child. I would go into dream state, and then I'd wake up and I'd see myself hovering above my body. And then, interestingly, I used to share a room with my sister, and I would see her doing the same, and we'd have competitions about who could leave the room and leave the house and go travelling further. But as I've got older now, what I like to do on a Sunday, for example, my husband likes to get up early and watch a film. I like to stay in bed a little, and I tell my higher self to allow me to leave my body, and then I go up for healing or for guidance or for realigning. And it sets me up then for the week ahead. I've been doing that for years now, and I actually really enjoy my Sunday mornings when I do that. So I've got no memory when I come back, or occasionally I'll get the odd memory, but I also do it in sleep. I dream a lot in sleep, and I travel a lot in sleep, and I know I help a lot of souls when I'm sleeping as well, because I've got memory of talking to people I've never met. I've travelled to Australia and New Zealand and all these different places where I just time travel in my sleep and end up speaking to a child or a person in need, and then I come back into my body. So I've had lots of this throughout the whole of my lifetime. It's quite normal to me now. I mean, years ago, I wouldn't have talked about this. I would have thought, you know, people think I'm nuts. But quite honestly, now I don't care if they do or not. It's how I live. It's what I do, and it's my normality. So, yeah, that's what I do.
Because you describe, well, you say in the book that you do time traveling. Can you describe that? What happens there?
Yeah, that's happened a lot. I sometimes go back in time where I see myself in a previous life, and I'm the observer. So I'm observing, and I won't be in the same form that I am now, in the same physical form, but I'll observe myself in a different form, but I'll know it's me. And it's just like, oh, now I know why I was in that lifetime. I've also seen walls, and I've got a very strong, this has happened to me a lot of times, where I've gone back to Second World War, where I've been in a concentration camp. And it's interesting, because as a young child, I was always absolutely fascinated by the Second World War and by Anne Frank and about the lives there. And I'm absolutely sure I've got a past life connection to a concentration of war camp.
So you have this kind of connection to reincarnation that's very interesting. And yeah, it's almost definitely like you have that connection to that space that is in between lives.
Definitely. I had a past life regression once, and I was a young girl who worked in a bakery with her father, and we used to provide the manor house with the bread, and that was a very strong past life. And I remember when I was dying, I died with some sort of very chest infection, pneumonia, and I was in a lot of pain, and I could see myself die. And then, do you remember Casper the ghost?
Yeah.
He's like that ghost-shaped figure. I became that shape as I left my body. And then I was in this little void for a while as this Casper the ghost shape. And then I saw another soul in the same shape who I recognised, but I couldn't tell you who that person was in personality, but I recognised their energy. And we merged together as like a hug, but it was a real merging together, recognition and hello, lovely to see you again. And then after that, I became, and I then had another life, but I can't remember what life I had after that. But I remember at the time of the regression, it was so powerful. And the lady who was doing it was really excited because she'd never had that happen before. But yeah, I've got a very clear memory of that.
And finally, the last thing I wanted to ask you about before we get onto the book is that you do channeling. So who comes through when you're doing that?
Well, basically, this is really beautiful. Since the awakening, as I call it, I can channel pretty much anyone who's passed. But I tend to go for the higher beings. So I'll go for Jeshua, or I'll go for, I love working with the archangelic realms. So I'll go with those, because during my near-death experience, I did have actually my angel appear to me afterwards when I was in a really bad state, and she told me that I was safe and it would never happen to me again, and that I was here to do great things. So I've got a soft spot, if you like, for the angels and archangelic realm. So I will channel them. I don't work with a specific guide. Interestingly, this last 6 months, Princess Diana has been coming through a lot, and which did take me by surprise, because she first started channeling when my younger boy was about 2 and he's now 24. And that took me by surprise, because I was at Warwick Castle looking at an exhibition of her dresses, and we were in this big queue. We had my older son with me, my husband, and my little boy who was in the pushchair, with all these people around us. And as we would get walking past the dresses, she started channeling through me, and I was then passing the information on to Wayne. So she's since come back, because she's definitely helping us with this next stage of our great transition, the great awakening. So she's been very prevalent the last few months, which has been an absolute delight to channel her. But if I work with someone, I open up to the highest channel available to me at that time, so that, you know, I'm very protected and safeguarded, and I'm open to see what comes through. And I channel that being, and it's always very clear who that being is, because of how I set up my space before I start channeling. But I'll feel the energy, and I start to recognise energies now. If I don't recognise it, I'll say, you know, what energy is this channeling? And then the information starts coming through from that being.
If we can move on to the book now, and it's set up in these different chapters. And yeah, the first one is called Empath's Journeys. So what are they talking about there?
But you know what's really interesting? I recognise when I was collating all the stories and threading them through, I thought it would make sense to put them into different areas so that the reader who maybe was reluctantly psychic and might have had a near-death experience, or might feel that they communicate with animals, or they might be very sensitive, if I put them into particular sections, it might help them with what they're going through. So what I noticed was that every one of the authors is an empath, someone who is highly sensitive, someone who picks up on energies. And personally, my experience of lockdown was that as a very, very sensitive empath, it served me really well, because I didn't have to have other people's energies around me. It was just me, my husband, our 2 dogs, you know, in my immediate vicinity. And I think that's what gave me the extra energy to put all this together, because it was a massive task. But empaths come in very different forms, and a lot of empaths do tend to go down the spiritual route, or particularly the complementary therapy route. Hang, one of our authors, she is an amazing therapist. I've had treatments off Hang, and she uses her empath skills and visions to help people with a massage and a dawn technique and all the therapies to realign them. So, we talk about being extremely sensitive, but rather than it being, rather than it being a challenge, we turned it into to the gift that it was, because it is actually a gift being an empath, because you can read situations, you get knowledge about people, you're pre-warned or preempted about certain situations. And rather than it being weird or challenging, it can actually be a very, very helpful gift to help you keep survive and keep going in this world.
Yeah, because there's some people who it's a bit too much for them, isn't it? Or they don't understand what's happening.
And that's exactly one of the reasons that this book was written, because I really feel that a lot of people are going to be waking up to their psychic gifts. The reason that we used the word psychic in the label was that it's such an old hat title, but we're trying to smash the stigma of being psychic, because we are all psychic, but some people have forgotten how to be. So with this lockdown and with this situation we've all been in, there are some people out there who suddenly start waking up to their psychic gifts and they'll be confused by it. So I'm hoping that when they read this book and they see the different areas that I've broken the book down into, like animal connections, empath's journeys, finding your soulmate, healing journeys, miracles abound, out of body experiences, I'm hoping that they'll read something and I think, God, I can resonate with that story. Maybe I'm going to investigate more and do a bit more meditating, mindfulness, or have some treatments. And then it will serve them in their awakening journey. That's the idea of it.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, some of you know I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. And so moving on to the next chapter, that is animal connections. So what sort of stories are there in there?
Well, I want to tell you a story that's happened since this book has been written. I had a beautiful Labrador, golden red fox Labrador called Bino. And Bino was a very, very special dog. He came to me from a client whose marriage broke down. And the first time I met him, I just knew he was our dog. We just connected straight away. And the connection he had with my husband was just incredible. This dog was so clever, because if I had a client come to see me who was going through a life challenge and they'd be upset and they'd be telling me this awful thing that happened to them, he would get up from his resting place and he'd sit inside in front of them. He'd put his paw on their lap as if to say, just look at me. They'd look into his eyes and I'd just say to them, just let him just look at you. And I know that that dog would give that person healing. Well, just after lockdown, he got very ill and died. And I was absolutely, totally distraught, because it came on very, very quickly and was a real shock to us. And he died age 9. And he's since told me that he is healing people now in his new life, and that he wants me to be very proud of him, because he's carrying on the work that he did here. So he communicates to me now and again. And the other week I was having a particularly bad day because I was really missing him. And I was sitting at my laptop doing some work. And it was a very stormy day. So I had the windows closed and it was just very, very stormy. And then something caught my attention. And it looked like a little black bundle of something. And I thought, where on earth has that come from? And then as I looked at it, I could see it was either a butterfly or a moth, but it was huge. And this butterfly moth flew all around me, and then it went into the crate where our little dog Teddy is, who was brought up with Bino. We had Bino first, then we got Teddy as a pup. So he'd been brought up with Beano and he was very, very sad. He was in his crate. And this moth butterfly went into his crate. So I then opened the door to let him out. And as he flew out, he was a red admiral, while Beano was a red fox Labrador. And I know that that was a sign from him saying, look, I'm okay, Mom. I'm with you. I'm with Teddy. I'm with Wayne. So that was just fantastic. And so that's his way of communicating with me. But some of the authors, well, actually, a lot of the authors are animal communicators, because when you're very sensitive and very connected, you communicate with all beings, whether they're humans or animals. And, you know, our animals really want to work with us right now because they are aware that so many people are in fear. So they are the filter, if you like, from the fear. And they have been a true service to us. I really believe that with our animals.
And also the next chapter is Miracles Abound. And this makes me think about I think there are things happening all around us all the time, but people are just too scared to speak up because they might seem to be too weird.
Absolutely. And it does say here that I'll put the definition here of what a miracle is. It's an extraordinary and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws and is therefore attributed to a divine agency. That is a definition of a miracle. But often a miracle is where you suddenly change your perception on a situation. But one of the stories in here, which I found totally fascinating, Dawn Alexander's on page 139, Keeping It Real When Life Seems Surreal. And she had a situation happen to her where she was probably going to need surgery or putting her ankle into a cast that was broken. And when she was in the hospital, a friend that came with her actually healed her ankle. And it reminded me of a story years ago when I used to do hands-on healing before I went into mentorship and writing books. I had this woman come to me and she'd had breast cancer. So she went through all the surgery and the chemo and the radiotherapy. But she had a burn from a radiotherapy, and this burn had created a hole in her breast. And she said to me that she came to me as a last resort, that she'd been recommended to me, and that she felt like she was a rotten apple, rotting from the inside out. And she was clearly, clearly distressed. She was also a very staunch Catholic. And as I was speaking to her, I could see that she was holding her cross. I thought, oh, my God, this is going to be a challenge. So I said to her, I said, look, how about you call in your God and I'll call in my perception of God. And if we both work together, let's just see what happens. And she seemed happy to do that. So that's what we did in her session. The next day I had a phone call from her, absolutely crying. I could hardly get any words out of her to say that that hole had healed up. And yet before that, she'd been to consultants, and they were trying all these different things that didn't work. But that hole healed overnight. Now, how can you explain that? I certainly can't. That was a miracle, without a doubt, without a question of a doubt.
And when you were with her, did you both work together and kind of say, we call in our guides or our angels to help us with this thing?
Yeah, we did. We called in God, because that was what she was comfortable with. But silently, I was calling in for the highest good and the highest healing available to her at that time to assist in her healing and what she could accept. And that's what she accepted. So it did freak her out a little bit, because it did make her question her belief system. But I have been assured that it was a massive life change for her, which is wonderful. So the job was done.
And we often hear people who've had near-death experiences, they have terrible injuries, but they heal so quickly. And the doctors describe it as a miracle.
Well, absolutely. I mean, when I was in hospital getting sewn up and put together after being stabbed, I had a stab wound to my leg that I pulled up to my chest to protect my chest, and it was 1.5 inches long. And yet I remember the consultant saying to me, if this would have gone in your chest, there's no way you'd be here now. So just that random act of pulling my leg up, that instinct of protecting myself, actually saved my life. So, yeah, miracles do abound. I believe in miracles, and I actually expect miracles now. Don't always get them, but have that mindset that if something
really needs to happen, I need to bring in that extra energy of magic and miracles, then it happens.
Miracle is a kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a religious word in a way, but that's how it is for me. That's how I kind of hear it. It's almost like, you know, you hear Jesus did these miracles and it almost sounds like they'd be so rare, but they are happening all the time. So what do you think's going on, say, on the other side of the veil? Who's there? Who's helping?
I believe that miracles are much more commonplace now. I don't class myself as religious, but I totally believe in miracles. And what my guidance and my channeling is telling me right now is that we are getting a huge amount of help at the moment, because we are on the precipice of this grand, great transition, this great awakening. We have chosen to be alive at this time during this great awakening. So all the helpers, all the guides, all the angelic realms, they are really trying to help us at the moment. And it's really important that as individuals living now, we need to be aware of being present, of being mindful, of allowing times to be connected to nature and connected to meditation, so that the messages can come in. Because if our heads are full of stuff and we don't empty our heads, this information isn't going to come through. So the constant message I've been getting is that you've been in training for this period your entire life, and that we are here to support you. And I really do believe that.
We'll move on to the next chapter, which is about out-of-body experiences.
Yeah.
Do you think that that might be accelerating as well?
Absolutely, definitely. I have had so many the last few months, and sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I feel exhausted because I know I've been working. But also, I think a lot of younger people are getting this, and it isn't just a case of, you know, smoking a joint and having an out-of-body experience, even though I know that if you do take drugs that can happen, because I've spoken to a lot of young people who take drugs and they have that experience. But it's also happening to people who don't have drugs who are experiencing this, because I've had lots of messages saying, this is happening to me, is this okay, is this normal, what do I do about it? And one of the ladies actually who talks about her out-of-body experience, she chooses to call herself Ray of Ascension. That's her pseudonym on this, on page 151. She has had them all her life. And when I first met her, she was so ungrounded that I had to teach her how to ground herself, because she was more out-of-body than she was in-body. But also, Simon, what I've also noticed is my dad's got advanced dementia. And I've not been able to see him since February the 29th, but I've been able to talk to him, you know, through this connection. And I really do believe that people with dementia are more in the other life than they are here. And when they have those periods of disappearance, if you like, that they go back into the next life. And I've certainly seen that happen a lot as well these last few months, because I've not been able to see him. I've been trying to connect with him and talk to him to sort of reassure him and say, you're okay, we're okay, you know, we love you, we can't see you, but we still love you, we haven't forgotten about you. And I know, I can tell that he's got that message, because I've seen his face smile. And, you know, so that's how I've been using that out-of-body experience to help during this challenging time as well.
Well, that's interesting, because I had a guest on a few weeks ago who was able to do automatic writing. And
yes,
somebody she knew with dementia was coming through. So they were still alive, but they were coming through in the automatic writing saying, well, I've been off traveling and I've seen my mother who, you know, died years ago.
Definitely, definitely. And that's another form of channeling, isn't it? And yeah, I definitely agree with that, because I know that's how my dad has been presenting himself to me. So I don't feel guilty for not being able to visit him. Well, I can't visit him because they're in lockdown, but I don't feel guilty. It's helped, you know, from a daughter-father perception, it's really helped me accept a situation that I can't really change, but how I behave to it can change, if that makes sense, by using these gifts. So, I think we're all opening up much more. I've noticed my husband has become a lot more aware, a lot more open. We were away with family the weekend, and there were four of our young men who were there, and from 20 to 28, and they're definitely opening up more psychically and having lots more deja vus, serendipities, dreams. And I said to them, do you not realise these are your psychic gifts waking you up so that they can help you through your life? And this is part of your gift. This is just like your sense of smell and sight. It's another sense that is aching for you to develop it, to help you evolve. Because as individuals, if we evolve more, then as a planet, we're going to evolve collectively more. And that is what this is about, where we are right now.
Your next chapter is finding your soulmate. But could you define what is a soulmate? How would you describe a soulmate?
Years ago, I was given a meditation, a channeled meditation, and this meditation takes you up whereby your particular light, your soul light, is replenished by going into a massive flame, which is a flame of oneness and connection. And I believe that you have more than one soulmate in your life. You don't just have one, but when you meet your soulmate, you'll recognize them and you'll feel very comfortable with them, and you'll feel that you've known them. And you'll also get these periods of being in comfortable silence where you don't need to fill the gap or the void with words, because you're at peace with each other and it's easy. Yeah, a soulmate journey can also be challenging, because a soulmate teaches you your shadow side by mirroring that to you so that you can continue to evolve and grow. That's my belief and perception of a soulmate.
And with soulmates, they don't always have to be a kind of romantic relationship. Your soulmate could be born as your sister, or they could be your best friend, couldn't they?
Absolutely. I've met, I'm a straight woman married to a man, and I've met many, many soulmates who are female, but also many soulmates who are male and I've got no attraction to, but I just feel very, very connected. I've got a lovely friend called James who he's my brother. He's my soul brother. There's no doubt about it at all. I think when you meet your soulmate, everything just clicks. You don't have to pretend. You can be your true, authentic self, and that person just gets you. They understand you, and they're just really happy to have met you again.
So they could be part of your soul group, and that you all
definitely
incarnate together through all these different lives and all these different relationships.
Yeah, definitely. I know that my older boy, Sam, I'm sure he was my father in a previous life, because I often say to him, you're not my dad, you don't need to speak to me. You know, he's always talking to me as if he's my dad, because he's looking out for me. And I'm absolutely sure he was my dad in a previous life, let alone me be his mother in this life. It's very interesting and amusing to watch that play out.
Does any of the stories in the Finding Your Soulmate chapter stand out for you?
Yes, actually, the one that does is Katie Knight. She found her soulmate, and during the making of the book and the production of the book, her soulmate is no longer her husband. So she became a knight, and now she's back to her maiden name. But she says that offering her contribution to this book has helped her realize that it is time for her to move on. And she's had the support of the others through her moving on, but she's very grateful for that soulmate connection. But that's gone now. And I've been really impressed with how she's been able to let go of it and move on with her life until the next stage, whatever that may be. So, yeah, I must admit, When she submitted a story becoming a knight, and she became a knight, and she told me that my marriage is ending, I'm now going to go back to my maiden name. I remember thinking, oh, God, I hope the book hasn't done this. But then I thought, well, of course the book has done this, because this book is to bring light, comfort, love, inspiration, and it has brought some awareness into her and her partner's life that it's time for them to move on. So I was a little bit sad about that, but also looking at it objectively, it's leapfrogged her into her next stage now.
And I did find in this, I keep on calling them stories, isn't calling them stories sounds like it's fiction, but it's not fiction, is it? And so much
no,
of
they're
it,
all true stories.
So much of it seems very personal and heartfelt. People are really laying it out there. And in the chapter for healing journeys, that there was a lot of that there.
Well, do you know, that chapter blew me away because my husband, Wayne Ward, actually said to me, Al, I want to write something. Well, my husband is incredibly private and is a man of little words, but he's a very compassionate, beautiful soul. So when he said, look, I want to write something, my mouth fell to the floor. And he writes about mind over pain. When he went through, well, we nearly lost him, actually. So that was a miracle to me. But the other miracle for me reading that was Jane Pass's story from the heart, because she was very, very poorly. And she came to me as a client due to her PTSD. And the gift of channel that I had was able to help her with that and move her on. And on one of the sessions that she had with me, I asked her if she would go and paint or draw about how she felt. And what that did, that unlocked her previous passion of painting and drawing. And now she's become a very successful artist. And she's just flourishing and blossoming. And it's absolutely wonderful to see.
That's come through. So you kind of channeled this idea. And it's an awakening for her.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happened.
That kind of leads us to the next chapter, which is Awakenings to Soul Purpose. And some of this is quite powerful.
Well, do you know, we could have all been in this chapter, really. The one that stands out for me, well, there's two that stand out for me. My Sacred Journey to the Magi, Diane Pegler. Diane is a very dear friend of mine. She wrote her book the same time I wrote my first book, Awarded by Angels. She wrote The Sacred Order of the Magi in 2010. And now that book is going to be made into a film, and it's going to be an amazing film. So she talks about her journey, and that has been her purpose for the last 10 years. But interestingly, what was just so wonderful, her daughter also asked if she could contribute, because she went through a massive life change awakening whereby she was pregnant and she lost her beautiful baby due to an ectopic pregnancy. And that has awoken her to the fact that she wants to share the stories of and the knowledge of what it's like to have an ectopic pregnancy. So out of this deep, deep sadness, We Will Rise comes from it, in that people have gone through tremendous sadness, tremendous traumas, yet they rise because they know their purpose is rising with them, a little bit like the phoenix out of the ashes. So I found that section incredibly, well, all of them, but that one particularly incredibly inspirational.
If somebody reads this book, What do you think they'll get out of it? What was the aim that you would be giving to people with this book?
The aim is to be authentic, to bring love and compassion in these challenging times, and with the hope that every reader will resonate with one story, which will either give them confirmation, love, comfort, or will help them realise that they too are awakening during the Great Awakening. And maybe they will then go on to inspire others and collaborate in some sort of way.
And so if there are people listening to this who are having psychic experiences and they're not quite sure what's going on, what would your advice be?
Well, we have got a website, so they could always contact us through the website, and they're going to have access to 44 souls. So that's reluctantlypsychic.co.uk. You know, get in touch with us, share your story, and maybe you will resonate with one of our authors who you might want to work with or communicate with.
Okay.
Don't be afraid of it. When we go through an awakening, it can be incredibly scary and frightening, but just remember to be positive and definitely journal your transition. Because when you read back on your journal, you will see how far you've come. And then when you have another wobble, you will read it back and think, right, these are the tools I used to get myself through this. I will do this again and it will help me. And just to say, you are not alone. And for you to be here at this time in our great awakening, you are loved and you have spirits, beings, energies around you who are here to support you.
One thing that I've noticed with other near-death experiences is they have a lot of after effects. And one of them that fascinates me is synchronicities. Do you get amazing synchronicities?
Oh, my God. Yes, definitely. I've probably become a little bit complacent about them, actually, because they just happen all the time. One that's just come to me that stands just one of the many, being on holiday with my husband years ago in a tiny little village in Crete somewhere that not many people knew about it. I saw a client of mine walk past and say, Al, there's a great crystal shop up the road there. I met a woman when I went to Dubai to do some work in 2005 who wasn't from the UK, wasn't from Dubai, and we found out that we lived in the same road together for 5 years and yet we'd never met. Oh, my God, they just go on and on and on. Just one which was fantastic. This happened to someone who's very close to me. This person was in Brazil doing a big event in Brazil. It was the Olympics. And he was sharing a room with this guy from different part of the UK. And they were talking about their love life and things that happened. And the young man said to him, he says, I'm sure my ex was unfaithful to me. And then this other guy said to him, oh, where was she from? And he told her, and he said, oh, I went out with a girl from that area. Her name was, say, I'm giving this example, Vicky. And then this other person said, well, actually, that was the name of my girlfriend. Her name was Vicky. And they found out that it was exactly the same girl. And she was actually cheating on the young man, this other guy. But they had to meet in Brazil in the Olympics and share a room to find this out. I think that is just the most amazing synchronicity. And when I heard about it, I was just like, wow, how protected are you? Because you've got your confirmation now, you can properly move on.
Yes, I suppose it's a release in a way. It's a kind of puts an emotional full stop there, an understanding.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I love that story. I just think it's brilliant.
So can you tell us about your other books?
Yes, so the first book, Awarded by Angels, is in my pseudonym, Angel Alison Ward. That shares the story of the awakening and the miracles that unfolded and my journey to doing what I do now. And then the second book is called Bringing You Back to You, and that shares the techniques and the tools that I was given, that I channeled, that helped me get well again, and has created a behavioural program that I've shared with my anxious clients over the years. And so that's like a self-help book, but if you follow it, you know, you'll really find it helps you. Then there's a little book of channelings called Get That Friday Feeling. Then there is my first children's book called Where is the Pot of Gold? And Bino, our Labrador, is featured in that book. And that teaches children from a young age emotional intelligence. And then we've got Reluctantly Psychic. And then my next book is another collaborative book. It's called Men Talk Health. And it's about men sharing their mental health challenges because I really am passionate about that. And that is my next one that will be coming out very soon.
Is there a spiritual side to that?
There is, but some of them haven't actually reached that yet. It's quite interesting because obviously this book has attracted some men who are very left brain. So I've got soldiers, but also there are some other men in this book who have recognised that by being present and mindful and centred and listen to the gut feelings that serves them. So I'm in the middle of creating that now. So I'm really interested to see where that is going to go because it is a much needed book. I mean, a statistic from 2 weeks ago, we had one COVID death, yet we have 20 male suicides. And that really concerns me. So I was nudged to do this book much earlier than I intended to do it. So I'm literally just compiling the stories now. I've only released this idea 2 weeks ago. So that's what I'm doing at the moment.
And do you have a training website?
During lockdown, I've actually decided to close that business. I've literally stripped my business back, and I'm focusing on writing and creating a community whereby we meet up online now through Zoom, and I do live readings and energy insights, the theme of the week. So I've decided to strip all that back and just focus on writing and creating a community at the moment, because if I can create this community, I can serve in that way. But then that gives me extra time to write these books that are absolutely nudging me to get out of there. So I've let go of that now. That's okay. One of my big cutting back. When you cut a rose bush back and it looks really skinny and tatty, then a few months later, these beautiful blossoms appear. That's what I've done with my business right now.
And can people have sittings with you over the internet?
Yes, they can. That's where I'm doing all my work now. Yes, they can. Anything from an hour to an hour and 15. But I work very quickly when I work. That's one thing that's happened actually during these last few months. I've noticed when I work with someone, the information comes out very quickly. Whereas before, they probably would have needed the hour session. Now I pretty much do it in half an hour. So it's cheaper for them as well. So yes, they can. I'm available for that.
And they get to you through the Reluctantly Psychic website?
Through that or through my email. They can personally email me at alison@reluctantlypsychic.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast. It's been great talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Simon. I've really enjoyed talking to you as well. I appreciate your time.
And that was an interview with Alison Ward about her book, Reluctantly Psychic, True Stories of Awakenings and Soul Purpose. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.